Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. Taxes was dealing with piles of paperwork and frustrating forms, and then waiting and wondering and worrying if you were ever going to get any money back. Now Taxes is easily uploading your forms to a TurboTax expert who's matched to your unique tax situation. An expert who's backed by the latest technology, which cross-checks millions of data points for 100% accuracy. While they work on your taxes, you get real-time updates on their progress. And you get the most money back guaranteed, all while you go about your day. No stressing, no worrying, no waiting. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Some people just love to travel and others hate it. Some rarely have the opportunity to travel because they don't have the time or money to spare. But when you're an infrequent traveler, going out of town can feel like a pretty great adventure. It can also be scary. When you're a stranger in a strange land, you're vulnerable. And there are people out there, from crooks to predators, who can recognize that vulnerability and exploit it. And that is sort of what our story is about today. The Rogers family was one of those families who'd never get out, never got to go on vacation, like ever. They had never seen the ocean. They'd never ventured far beyond their little village of Wilshire, Ohio, where they lived. They didn't have a lot of money, and operating their 300-acre farm out in rural Ohio was a full-time job, one that left little room for leisure. Al and Joanne Rogers had been high school sweethearts, and they married only 4 months after Joanne graduated from high school. Both of them had grown up on farms, and farm life was all they knew. He worked on their farm all day, while Joanne and their two daughters, Michelle and Christy, were usually at the crack of dawn to lend a hand. Milking cows and minding the crops, life was simple for the Rogers family. That was until Michelle turned 14 years old. That was when her Uncle John sexually assaulted her. John had co-owned the farm with his brother Hal until 1988. It stopped in 1988 because that was the year John was arrested for raping an 18-year-old roommate at knife point after she returned home from a date. So he raped his own young roommate, and when the police searched his trailer, which was next door to the family farm, they found a briefcase full of incriminating material. This included a videotape of the rape, audio tapes of sexual abuse, and Polaroids of a partially nude young woman with a blindfold on. Now this young woman was different from the 18-year-old roommate he had raped, and they invested further, they discovered that the young woman in the photos was his own niece, Michelle. He had sexually assaulted her half a dozen times, starting in the summer of 1986, when she was 14, and he continued all the way through November 1987, when he was arrested for sexually assaulting his roommate. When police interviewed Michelle, she told them that her uncle would rape her when her mom and dad were away from the farm. He'd always blindfold her and tie her up, and sometimes he would carry out the attack by holding a knife to her throat. It would make her call him master. And afterward, he threatened to hurt her if she told anyone. Talking about her sexual abuse with police was itself pretty harrowing for Michelle, as you can imagine. She was actually spared from having to testify against her uncle when he took a plea deal in exchange for a sentence of 7 to 25 years. It wasn't just this whole situation that was traumatic for Michelle. It was also just as painful that her father, Hal, actually bailed his own brother out of jail after the arrest and accused his own daughter of lying to the police. So his brother goes to jail for sexually assaulting his 18-year-old roommate. During the investigation, they discover he's been sexually assaulting Michelle as well. Well, Michelle's dad bails his brother out of jail and then looks at Michelle and says, "Stop lying." These wounds would not go away so easily, but once the ordeal passed and 1989 rolled in, the Rogers family tried to forget about everything. They tried to give themselves something to look forward to, a palate cleanser, a clean slate. And this came in the form of a trip to Florida. This trip would be the first time that the Rogers daughters had ever been outside of the state of Ohio. It was a vacation they had planned for the whole family for late May. But when expected heavy rainfall that spring flooded the fields, Al fell behind schedule on the farm and realized that he had to stay behind. Tending a farm is the kind of job where you can't really take a day off. But Hal knew how much his wife and daughters had been looking forward to going to Florida. Maybe he even secretly felt some guilt about what had happened with his brother. So he decided to encourage them to go along without him. Go take the vacation, he told them. He'd stay back. And so that's what the girls did. They began preparing for their trip as the end of the month approached. Joanne, Michelle, and Christy left for Florida on the afternoon of Friday, May 26. It was going to be a shorter trip, only a week long, because Joanne had to be back at work. She worked a part-time job at a food warehouse, and she needed to be back by Monday, June 5. Michelle also had to start summer school that same day, so they needed to be back. But a week-long trip to Florida seemed like the perfect bit of respite from the trauma they had endured over the last couple of years. Instead of flying, which they'd never done anyway, Joanne and her daughters decided to make it a road trip. It was a 1,000-mile trip that would require about 16 hours of driving time. Because of this, they weren't just going to drive straight there. They'd have to stop along the way. After Hal saw them off and they hit the road, they made it as far as northern Georgia before checking into a Best Western and recharging for the night. Once they got back on the road the next morning, they drove another 7 hours before stopping again, this time in Jacksonville, Florida. The following day, the family began their Florida adventure at the Jacksonville Zoo, where Joanne bought a postcard and sent it to her friend Lori. After leaving the zoo, they traveled to Ocala, about 2 hours away, and took a ride on a glass-bottom boat at Silver Springs. From there, they moved on to the Kennedy Space Center. On the fourth day of their trip, they spent the morning at the beach before making their way to Orlando, spending the rest of the day at SeaWorld. Joanne and the girls were having the time of their lives. They were seeing new things, having new experiences. It was almost overstimulating because this was so different from the farm they knew. That night, Joanne sent Hal a postcard telling him about their trip so far, the incredible heat and humidity of Florida, and their plans to go to Disney World the next day. On May 30th and 31st, their final 2 days in Orlando, the Rogers family went to Epcot and MGM Studios before continuing on to Tampa. Throughout the trip, Joanne and the girls phoned Hal to check in each time they reached a new destination. They'd get to a hotel and call home, so when they checked into their room at the Days Inn in Tampa on June 1st, Joanne called Hal to let him know that they'd arrived safely. Michelle also called her boyfriend Jeff to wish him a happy birthday and let him know that they were having a blast. Michelle told Jeff that she really wanted to go swimming at the beach, but her mom wouldn't let them go too far into the water because no one in the family knew how to swim. She said she'd talk to him later. That was the last time Joanne, Michelle, or Christy would check in with anyone back home. By the evening of Sunday, June 4th, Hal Rogers was growing concerned. He had expected his family back that night, yet he hadn't heard a peep from them since Thursday. Joanne was due back at work the next morning, Michelle was set to begin summer school, but there was no sign of them. No updates, no news of delays, no check-ins during her drive home. Meanwhile, Jeff, Michelle's boyfriend, was also getting anxious. He hadn't heard from her either, so he decided to call Hal several times throughout the day to ask if they'd returned yet. They hadn't. As Hal went out to feed the cows that night, he scanned the darkened horizon for any sign of his wife's Oldsmobile, but there was nothing. All day Monday, Hal tended to his cattle and his crops, distracted by an uneasiness weighing in the pit of his stomach. By Tuesday, when his family still hadn't shown up or called, Hal assumed the worst. Maybe there had been an accident. Maybe they'd been kidnapped. Maybe they were dead. But Hal had no idea where to even begin looking. 1,000 miles separated Ohio and Florida, and Hal didn't know if his family had even left Florida. Or if they had, where they might have run into trouble. He waited another day, hoping they'd come home. 3 days had now passed before Hal finally called the Florida Highway Patrol and the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office to report his wife and daughters missing. Despite filing the missing persons report, he wasn't getting anywhere with either agency. What Hal didn't know was that back on Sunday, June 4th, the same day he started to worry, a grim discovery had been made in Tampa Bay. After an early morning thunderstorm, kind that's routine along Florida's coastline, some people on a sailboat called Amber Waves were passing under a bridge when they saw something floating in the water, something that looked like a human body. Later that same day, people on another sailboat at another location also saw a body. Shortly afternoon, passengers on a pleasure boat reported seeing a third body in the same general area. By early afternoon, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office had recovered 3 bodies from the water. All 3 were female, nude from the waist down, and each had been bound, gagged, and had a yellow rope fastened around their necks, tied to concrete cinder blocks. This next part is going to get pretty graphic, so if you're sensitive to details, feel free to skip ahead. It appeared likely that all three women had been sexually assaulted before being thrown into the water. Forensic examination of the bodies showed that each of them had water in their lungs, meaning they had died from drowning. This also meant they had been thrown into the water while still alive, weighed down by the cinder blocks, and had sunk to the bottom. One of the women had managed to free her hands, but not her feet, from the concrete block that kept her at the bottom. This detail makes it even more devastating to think about the sheer terror they must have experienced. Because the woman had been in the water for 3 to 4 days, decomposition had already begun. The warm temperature of the water had accelerated the process, and gases from decomposition caused the bodies to rise to the surface where they were discovered. The investigation into the discovery of the three bodies became a collaboration between the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office and the St. Petersburg Police Department. It was clear that this was a triple homicide, but there were no suspects. At first glance, the only clue was that one of the women was wearing a wedding band, but no one in the area had reported three women missing. Desperate for leads, police held a press conference and displayed the jewelry recovered from the three victims, hoping someone watching on TV might recognize it. Another lead they pursued was a report of three women, matching the general description of the victims, who had been seen hitchhiking along the Tampa Interstate that weekend. However, nothing concrete came from that. The fingerprints of the three victims were sent by express air to the FBI lab in Washington, D.C., since no record of their prints were found in local databases. One of the challenges in cases like this, where the victims are dumped into the water, is that the water washes away so many potential clues. Although police were pretty sure the women had been raped, based on the way they were partially undressed, they weren't able to recover any biological evidence because the bodies had been in the water too long. In the middle of that week, the manager of the Days Inn in Tampa contacted police to report that the guests in room 251 hadn't been seen since the day they checked in. The housekeeper had continued cleaning the room every day, but it had looked to her like nothing in the room had been touched. The beds hadn't been slept in, the towels were never used. When Tampa police arrived to investigate, they learned that the room had been reserved by a woman named Joanne B. Rogers from Ohio, who had checked in the previous Thursday with her two teenage daughters. Because of the recent discovery in Tampa Bay, the room was cordoned off, and detectives from the St. Pete Police Department arrived to search it. Three women from Ohio were missing, and three bodies had just been found. Inside the room, detectives recovered a tube of toothpaste and a few other belongings. But the most significant discovery was a camera belonging to the victims, which contained an undeveloped roll of film. The woman's car, however, wasn't in the motel parking lot. Police drove up and down the Courtney Campbell Causeway across Tampa until they spotted the car, a 1986 Oldsmobile with Ohio plates. It was parked at a public boat launch ramp about 2 miles from the motel. Inside the car, they found a map on the passenger seat and a piece of stationery from the Days Inn with a handwritten note on it. The note read, "Turn right, west on 60, 2.5 miles on right, all before bridge, blue with white." The note reflected the route they had taken from the motel to where their car was found. The phrase, "blue with white," stood out. Police immediately suspected the note could have been written by the killer, to lure them to the location, but there was no way to be sure yet. The discovery of the camera would soon provide more clues. The discovery of the camera in the Days Inn room was a key piece of evidence. Investigators sent the undeveloped roll of film to the lab to process it, hoping it may reveal something to move the investigation forward, maybe even a clue to the killer's identity. When the photos were developed, detectives saw images of the Rogers family in the days leading up to their murders. There were pictures from their stops at the Jacksonville Zoo, Silver Springs, and other tourist spots. The two girls appeared sunburned, likely from their time at the beach. The final photo on the roll of film was chilling. It was a shot taken from the balcony of their room at the Days Inn in Tampa. Based on the shadows and the position of the sun, experts estimated that the time to be between 6:30 and 8 p.m. just around sunset. According to the motel log, the Rogers family had checked into the room at 12:28 on June 1st, around the same time Joanne called home to Ohio. Witnesses reported seeing the family at the hotel restaurant that evening around 7:30 p.m. That was the last time anyone saw Joanne, Michelle, or Christy alive. Inside the Rogers family car, the boat ramp, police found another note. This one was written on a travel brochure and contained directions similar to the note written on the Days Inn stationery. However, the handwriting on this note didn't match Joanne's. Detectives immediately suspected the killer had written the second note. The most significant detail from Joanne's handwritten note was the phrase, blue with white. It seemed to suggest they were looking for something, perhaps a boat, painted blue and white at the boat launch. The car was found at a public boat launch, so anyone could have used it. There was no registry or log of who may have been there that day, nor were there any boats docked at the ramp when police arrived. The area where the Rogers family car was found was only about a mile from the Days Inn where they were staying. Excuse me. However, the location where their bodies were recovered in Tampa Bay was approximately...
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
25 miles away. This led investigators to believe that the woman had boarded a boat at the ramp and were taken out into the bay. To determine the likely location where the woman had been thrown into the water, detectives worked with the Marine Sciences Department at the University of Florida. By analyzing ocean currents and other environmental factors, they concluded the bodies had almost certainly been dumped from a boat in the middle of the bay. Over the following weeks, police investigated numerous tips involving blue and white boats. Unfortunately, every lead turned into a dead end. As the months passed, the investigation began to stall. The number of detectives working on the case dwindled from 24 to just 2. By September 1989, the task force was disbanded due to a lack of progress and new leads. Then, in October 1989, a detective for the St. Petersburg Police Department came across an article in a monthly magazine published by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. The article described an unsolved rape case that had occurred 2 weeks before the Rogers family murders. Similarities between the two cases were striking. This earlier case took place in Madeira Beach, about 30 miles from Tampa, and involved a 24-year-old Canadian tourist named Priscilla, which is not her real name. She had been visiting Florida with her friend Anne, another pseudonym. One evening, the two women were leaving a 7-Eleven when a man approached them. He introduced himself as Dave Posner, struck up a friendly conversation. He asked if they were tourists, and they told him they were visiting from Canada. The man told them he was 33 years old, working in roofing, and had lived in Florida for several years. He said he used to live near the Canadian border in upstate New York and joked that he didn't miss the freezing winters. Priscilla and Anne chatted with him for a few minutes before realizing they were running late to meet a friend at a nearby restaurant. Dave offered to give them a ride, but Priscilla declined, saying they could walk. The man insisted, "You're already running late. You'll get there much faster if I drive you. No trouble." Reluctantly, the two women agreed to accept the ride. He got into his car and rode them to the restaurant. During the drive, Dave told the woman about a 30-foot boat he owned that was docked nearby. He invited them to join him for a boat ride the next day. The woman thanked him for the offer but didn't commit. After being dropped off, they met up with her friend at the restaurant. Later, Priscilla decided she might take the man up on his offer. She thought it could be a fun experience and felt obligated since she had already agreed to meet him earlier. The next day, she met Dave at the dock. He greeted her warmly and asked where her friend Anne was. Priscilla explained that Anne didn't want to join. "She's going to miss a really nice day. The boat was blue and white, just as he described. They spent the morning fishing and sightseeing, and Dave was friendly and talkative. He taught Priscilla how to bait a fishing hook and use a crab trap. But later, as the engine began to sputter, Dave told her they'd have to cut the trip short and return to the dock so he could get the engine repaired. He suggested they meet again later that evening for a sunset cruise. When Priscilla returned to her vacation condo, she told Anne about the afternoon on the boat. He explained that Dave and invited her back for a sunset ride and asked Anne to come along this time. Anne refused. Something about the situation didn't sit right with her. Priscilla, however, felt obligated to go because she had already agreed. Priscilla met Dave again that evening. He seemed annoyed that Anne hadn't joined them. He's really missing out, he said. They got back on the boat and spent some time fishing again. As the sun set, Dave took photos of Priscilla, capturing her. As the sun dipped below the horizon, Priscilla suggested they head back to the dock, but Dave ignored her. Instead, he told her to come closer to him. You're a really nice-looking lady, he said. Come here and sit on my lap. Priscilla immediately declined. No, I'm good. At that moment, everything changed. His demeanor shifted from friendly to threatening. His voice became gruff and his expression hardened. You're going to have sex with me, he said, staring at her coldly. Priscilla was shocked and immediately pushed back. No, I'm not, she told him. If you force me, you're going to go to jail for rape. But her words didn't faze him. Instead, he laughed. Priscilla started to scream, hoping someone might hear, but Dave mocked her. Do you think anyone's going to hear you all the way out here? He began listing her options in a chilling, methodical tone. She could give in, or she could try to jump out of the boat, but he warned her that the water was filled with sharks. Just a little sex, he said. Nothing worth dying over. Priscilla continued to resist, but the man overpowered her. He sexually assaulted her on the boat, ignoring her screams and protests. Afterward, he staggered to the opposite end of the boat and vomited overboard. Then he grabbed Priscilla's camera, ripped out the film, and tossed it into the water. He wiped the camera clean with a piece of cloth before handing it back to her. When he finished cleaning up, he started the boat and steered it back toward the dock. As they approached the shore, he said, I know you're going to report me, but if you do, please just give me a chance to go home and tell my little old mother. She'd be really upset if a policeman shows up at her door. He'll kill her. Priscilla agreed, desperate to get away from him. When they reached the shore, he directed her to step out into the shallow surf and wade to the dock. She did as she was told and made her way back to land. When Priscilla returned to her vacation condo, she went straight to the bathroom to clean herself up. She felt humiliated, angry, and afraid. She waited a full day before breaking down and telling Anne what had happened. Anne convinced her to go to the police, and they flagged down a cop. Priscilla was brought to the Madeira Beach Police Department, where she gave a detailed account of the assault. She described the man, his boat, and his car, a blue and white boat, and a Suzu. Also worked with a sketch artist to create a composite of the man, who called himself Dave Posner. The police had no luck finding him. They believed Dave Posner was a fake name, as no one by that name matched the description in any records. With no leads, the case went cold. Fast forward to October 1989, when a St. Petersburg detective read about this unsolved rape case. Details immediately stood out. A man with a blue and white boat, a stranger offering tourists a boat ride, sexual assault taking place on the water. It was eerily similar to the Rogers family case. Detectives decided to release the composite sketch of Dave Posner to the public, along with a description of the man, his boat, and his vehicle. One person who saw the sketch was Joanne Steffi, a resident of Tampa Shores. The moment she saw it, she thought of her neighbor, Oba Chandler. Joanne had always felt uneasy about Oba. There was something about him that seemed cagey, untrustworthy. He was an aluminum contractor who had done some work for her, and she didn't like the vibe he gave off. Joanne knew that he drove an Isuzu. She also knew that he owned a blue and white boat. Still, she thought it might just be a coincidence. After all, Tampa Bay was a huge metropolitan area with millions of people. What were the odds her neighbor was the man in the sketch? She clipped a sketch out of the newspaper, stuck it to her fridge with a magnet, and left it at that. Months passed, then years. By 92, 3 years had gone by since the murder of Joanne, Michelle, and Christy. The case remained cold, with no strong suspects. That summer, someone had an idea to launch a billboard campaign. The distinctive handwriting on the travel brochure found in the Rogers car, which police believed was written by the killer, was enlarged and displayed on billboards across West Tampa. The handwriting included unique quirks like the use of capital T's instead of lowercase ones, and the odd way the writers formed lowercase Y's. Investigators believed the handwriting was distinctive enough that someone might recognize it. One of the many people who saw the billboards was once again Joanne Steffi. When she saw the handwriting, she felt chills. She recognized it immediately. It was Oba Chandler's. Joanne remembered that Chandler had written her a receipt when she did some work for her years earlier. She dug through her papers and found it. The handwriting was an exact match. This time, Joanne didn't hesitate. She took the receipt to the police. Detectives compared Chandler's handwriting to the note written on the travel brochure. It was a perfect match. When they ran a background check at Oba, they learned he had a long criminal record, including charges for burglary, kidnapping, armed robbery, and sexual assault. He even had a history of being a peeping Tom. He was also married, had 8 kids with 7 different women, and ran an aluminum building business. Chandler lived on Dalton Avenue in Tampa Shores, just a half a mile from the boat launch where the Rogers family car had been found. Ship-to-shore phone records placed Chandler's boat out on the water both on the day of the Rogers family murders and the day of Priscilla's assault. It was enough to bring him in for questioning. When detectives brought Oba in for questioning, he denied everything. He claimed he had no idea who the Rogers family was, and said he had nothing to do with the murders or the assaults of Priscilla. But detectives were building a solid case against him. First, they had the handwriting evidence. Handwriting on the travel brochure found in the Rogers car matched Chandler's handwriting from the receipt he had written for Joanne Steffi. Second, they had the ship-to-shore phone records. Chandler had made a series of calls from his boat on the day of the Rogers family murders. These calls placed him in Tampa Bay, near the area where their bodies were later discovered. Third, they had Priscilla. When detectives traveled to Canada to re-interview her, they showed her a photo lineup. Without hesitation, she picked out Oba Chandler's photo. But the most damning piece of evidence came from the travel brochure itself. Chandler's palm print had been found on the brochure, the same brochure that police believed was used to lure the Rogers family to the boat launch. This was the smoking gun detectives needed. On September 24, 1992, Oba Chandler was arrested and charged with the murders of Joanne, Michelle, and Christy Rogers. When the case went to trial, prosecutors laid out a chilling story of what had happened to the Rogers family. They argued that Chandler had met the family at some point before they checked in to the Days Inn. He likely approached them under the pretense of being a friendly local, offering them directions or advice about sightseeing. During this interaction, he wrote the directions to the boat launch on the Days Inn stationery, adding blue with white to reference his boat. Later that evening, he likely convinced them to meet him at the boat launch for a sunset cruise on his blue and white boat. Once they were out on the water, Chandler's demeanor changed. He became violent, sexually assaulted the women, and ultimately decided to kill them to cover up his crimes. Prosecutors painted a horrifying picture of the woman's final moments, bound, gagged, and tied to concrete blocks, before being thrown into the water alive. The defense tried to argue that the evidence against Chandler was circumstantial. They claimed that there was no direct proof that he had murdered the Rogers family. But the evidence was overwhelming. The handwriting, the palm print, the ship-to-shore's phone records, and Priscilla's identification of Chandler as her rapist were enough to convince the jury. On November 4, 1994, Oba Chandler was found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder. During sentencing, the jury unanimously recommended the death penalty, and the judge agreed. Chandler maintained his innocence all the way through his time on death row. In fact, he left behind a handwritten note on the day of his execution that read, "You are killing an innocent man." But investigators and most people believed there was no doubt about his guilt. On November 15, 2011, after nearly 17 years on death row, Oba Chandler was executed by lethal injection. He offered no final words. 3 years after his death, in February 2014, cold case detectives in Broward County, Florida, re-examined the unsolved 90 murder of a 20-year-old woman named Elise Barros Burgess. She disappeared after leaving her job at a mall in Sunrise, Florida. Her car was later found in the mall parking lot with 2 flat tires, and her body was discovered hours later on someone's front lawn in Coral Springs. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled. The case had gone cold for decades, until 2014, when DNA from Elise's rape kit was uploaded into a state database. Results: a match to Oba. This revelation confirmed what investigators had suspected all along. Chandler wasn't just a murderer, he was a serial killer. The murder of the Rogers family was likely not his first, nor was it his last. His crimes were calculated, methodical, horrifying, violent. Today, the story of the Rogers family serves as a cautionary tale about the dangers of trusting strangers. What began as an exciting first vacation for the Rogers women turned into a nightmare at the hands of a predator who had perfected his ability to manipulate and harm. It's a heartbreaking reminder of the evil that can lurk beneath a friendly facade. Let me know your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. Hit that subscribe button down below. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, every penny you give into Buy Me a Coffee goes right back into the channel to upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, pay them, and one day take this show on the road. And your support can help make that happen. Of course, you can find us on all major podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Amazon, Good Pods. Anywhere you get your podcast platform podcast from, you can find us. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.